You're listening to The Dividend, presented by Fees Always Win, the show before the show, after the show. It is what it is.
Because one, there's I Hate NBA Guy. And I Hate NBA Guy always references college as a better sport. One, they play for the name on the front of their jerseys and not the back of the jerseys. They don't need money to be happy and showboat. The coaches have more control. All right, so y'all mad. DeMarcus Cousins took a pay cut to join a team to win championships. So all the things that they've always said that college endears them to is going to a winning program, playing for the team, getting recognition as a team player, and taking less money. They mad at now.
It's funny because college, the NCAA, is the biggest pimp, the biggest gangster, the biggest hustler, the biggest bully on the yard. They don't pay taxes. They make money off of players. And I get the argument for free education. I get all of that. But if a player wants to give his autograph to somebody and get paid for it, he can get suspended. But the NCAA has a game that they sell where players have their likeness, their number, basically that player, but you can't use their name to make money. They make money off of so many different aspects. They don't pay taxes for it. It's almost a religion in a sense, the way that they're treated and the power that they have, the billions upon billions of dollars that they have. But you have NBA players and LeBron James. I'll take you further than that. We always talk about LeBron. Oscar Robinson is the one who really kicked all this off. And to an extent, he got blackballed because of it. Like we always talk about Michael Jordan, and Oscar Robinson put his career on the line and basically got blackballed because he fought against the NBA. Because at the time, there was no free agency. Like, we always talk about Kobe, and we talk about all these different players who they focus solely on basketball. I respect the players who actually put their careers and their livelihoods on the line for a bigger cause. And I don't think Oscar Robertson gets enough respect for that. But one last thing, and I'm going to go off my tangent because, you know, apparently I'm just on one there. It's so interesting how baseball is viewed versus how the NBA is viewed. Baseball, they don't have a cap. They can spend as much money as they want. So when the Yankees go get Alex Rodriguez and this CC Sabathia, when they overload their team, they're like, hey, man, that's just, you know, the evil empire is building up. But in the NBA, when teams start taking control of their destiny, DeMarcus Cousins didn't even have anybody really give him a serious offer. He said, I'm going to go to the best team in the league. I get to rehab. I get to learn. I get to reshape my image. And then next year, hopefully, make a better deal. That's called being a grown-up. If anything, they should respect that move.
And I get to move back to California, where I already have a house. Once again, this goes back to it's the owner's fault. Because Kevin Durant would have never been on the they would have never had the cap space to sign Kevin Durant if there was cap smoothing. Yes, the NBA Players Association have to agree with the owners to have cap smoothing. But the owners negotiated in bad faith for the last 30 years, always tried to ostracize the NBA players, tell them how they were taking too much money, and then expected them to do them a favor. Like, if you operate in bad faith, of course the players aren't going to trust you and get all the money they can immediately. But nobody told these owners they have to sign Evan Turner. Nobody told them they have to sign Ryan Anderson. Nobody told them they have to sign Joakim Noah for $20 million. Nobody told them they have to sign Luol Deng. Nobody told them they have to sign Tyler Johnson. They did that on their own. So
they made those bad moves.
Yeah, so not even the Rockets can complain. You got somebody you're paying $17 million who didn't even play in the playoffs.
And think about it.
That's ownership.
Yeah, ownership. They're making billions. The players are making millions. And the players, for the most part, I get the whole concept of take your money. But these owners are billionaires. Look at Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas, because he chose to play through a hip injury, he may never come close to making the money he could have made if he would have, at the first hint of pain, set out and healed himself and got back to where he needed to be. There are a bunch of players who were loyal, who played injured and did things how they felt would be the right way. And because of that, they got messed over. So I will always respect a player who has enough business acumen to say, you know what, this is a business. It doesn't go one way. It goes both ways. You can't be mad at me when I make business choices, but then when you make business choices that make mess me and my family over, I'm just supposed to say, oh, it's a business. You got to be able to have reciprocity and respect the fact that people are making business moves and not out here making, you know, emotional decisions.
Isn't that the argument for Kawhi Leonard not playing?
Right.
Like, he says his leg don't feel right. The team doctor says it does. They try to ostracize him in the media. And now they're like, why won't he talk to Pop? It's like Pop called them out as well as his teammates. What advantage does he have going home to San Antonio? Right. And their argument is, we're going to pay you the most money. He still wears cornrows and drives a Tahoe. What makes you think an extra $20 million is going to sway him?
Right. We talked about this maybe a couple of years ago. Grant Hill. I didn't know Grant Hill almost had his foot amputated based off of his injury.
Yeah, and everybody tried to blame it on his shoes, but he says it was the doctors that misdiagnosed him and let him get a staph infection. And they took away, his whole career was over. That's crazy. There's people who never knew what type of game Grant Hill had. And he was on the way to a Hall of Fame career. If he just played those injured years, not even scoring the 20 average. If he just averaged 15, he'd probably be in the Hall.
Grant Hill was on pace to be the next Michael Jordan. That's where people saw him as. Like, I don't think people remember that. I sit back and think about all these players that were loyal and did right by the companies and, you know, tried to do things the right way. I'll take it to football. Andre Johnson. The way the Texans did Andre Johnson, for me, is a complete illustration of why you cannot truly and faithfully trust businesses and companies, especially in the world of sports. For all that he did when he didn't have any quarterbacks, man, they dumped him and got rid of him as soon as they found another receiver that was, in their minds, just as good. Like, it's been so many cases of that where they just get rid of you. They're done with you, and you're just looking stupid. Or Steve McNair at the Tennessee Titans. That man played injured year in, year out. They were trying to trade him. They wouldn't even let him into the facility in Tennessee. Like,
and then you find out later what type of coach Jeff Fisher is. It's your quarterback needed psychological help. You didn't want to help him after he put his body on the line to win you Rookie of the Year. Then you go ahead and tell everybody in the world what his medical problems are, and then you leave the team and proceed to go 8-8 for the next 20 years in St. Louis.
The dude has, I don't know if he has it or maybe they fired him before he officially got it. But if he isn't the losingest coach in all of NFL history, he's like number two. And he kept getting work.
He was Teflon. I just wonder what type of research file he had on all of his bosses. He had to have had a file. Like the ones that that politicians make when they're campaigning and they all have an opposition file where it's everything about that person that they could possibly find and they're just holding it back. Like I felt Pusha T had for all these years. And he was like, I got one. If I just get him to respond, I got fire for him.
You know what? I consider those to be the J. Edgar Hoover files, because they say J. Edgar Hoover had files on everybody. Like, whenever he wanted something, he just pulled out the file. Like, oh, okay, you say John F. Kennedy? Hold on, let me grab that folder. So, yeah, one of those attachés or whatever the word is.
Yeah, attaché, I guess, is the government name. Op files are the candidate names. And everybody else, I think they just call it blackmail.
Right, exactly. Oh, man, Jeff Fisher, he knew somebody that knew somebody. So you're saying Coach K, but the NCAA is the biggest pimp of all.
No, the system's definitely a pimp, and not all the NCAA, because all the sports that aren't basketball and football aren't pimping their athletes.
But the ones that are basketball and football.
And so, no, those two sports, the NCAA is definitely pimping those athletes. And that makes a big difference. I absolutely think it makes a difference. And the NBA at least is going to fix it to give another lifeline, but I don't think there is a way to fix it for football unless you create a whole separate minor league, because 18-year-olds can't play with 22-year-olds.
Right. There's just a physical difference in where the body's mature.
Yeah, you'll have a 30-year-old linebacker would tear apart a 17-year-old lineman.
Right.
Just rip through the line. Just experience, strength, everything. Grown man strength versus really strong teenager.
Right. Not even close.
Not even close. But that being said, welcome to episode 23. This is not the regular show, but it is the dividend. An extra little piece of things that we thought about all week, thinking about now, and want to discuss before we actually get into this week's episode. And to start that off, happy Bobby Bonilla week. And if y'all are unfamiliar with the story, Bobby Bonilla, every agent should want to be like Bobby Bonilla's agent. Because not just Bobby Bonilla's getting paid, that means his agent's getting a 3-10% check every single year for a player that's been retired for almost 20.
The New York Mets being the New York Mets.
And I brought this up because our episode, the next episode, is going to be about annuities. As last week we were talking about retirement anyways, but what do baseball and annuities have in common? Bobby Bonilla is one of those. It's been 15 years at the time of this article when it was written in 2015 since he swung a bat. But every year on July 1st, former baseball star Bobby Bonilla could swing by to pick up a paycheck of nearly $1.2 million from the New York Mets. In Game 7 of the World Series, he'd launch a ball over the center field wall for a home run that would help the Florida Marlins clinch the World Series at Miami Gardens. Fast forward the 4 years, and Bonilla wasn't hitting nearly as many championship home runs. In fact, in 1999, his last season, he only hit 4 home runs and had 18 RBIs. Plus, getting in a shouting match with Bobby Valentine wasn't exactly helping team morale. There were allegations later denied that Bobby Bonilla threatened to fight Valentine after a heated exchange in the dugout. The Mets wanted out, and Bobby Bonilla knew that at 36 years old, most of his baseball playing career was behind him. But because of his contract, Mets still owed him $5.9 million for the rest of the season. Regardless of his playing and threats of breaking locker room coolers, Bobby Bonilla offered to strike a deal. He wanted to guarantee yearly payments of $1.193 million every year until his 70s. And for that, he wouldn't be a Mets problem anymore. The deal resembled the choice lottery winners are faced with when taking a similar lump sum or taking payments in form of an annuity. It's not unheard of in sports contracts, but it's not the type of deal that gets put on the table often. Why did the Mets take the deal? A big factor is they wanted to free up money. The following year it worked. They did make it to a World Series. But as part of that, Bobby Bonilla deferred a payment annuity at 8% interest that started paying on July 1st, 2011, and ended in 2035. The move transformed his remaining contract of $5.9 million into nearly $30 million worth of payments until 2035. In some way, it's not a bad move for the Mets. They freed up payroll. They got involved in a Ponzi scheme with Bernie Madoff that they may or may not have profited off of. But I just want to give a bravo and congratulations to whatever manager thought of this idea to help Bobby Bonilla secure his future and secure the bag.
Bobby Bonilla secured the bag before that was even a popular phrase. In fact, he should be the person that trademarks that term, secure the bag, because he literally has been securing the bag and will continue to do so for years to come.
I'm And what's wild is now there's so many people that are doing it. Didn't it, Peyton Manning defer his final payments to help out the team?
Did he?
I thought he did.
Huh.
Like, I think there's a couple of athletes that's deferred payments for options of payouts because the team gets to invest that money or utilize the money for something else. And they're like, I'm already loaded because this is a lot different. In 20 years, yes, they were rich back then. $5 million's a lot of money. But it's still a different marketplace when athletes, most of your top athletes, or even the mid-level exception for basketball, which is you're not a minimum player, but you're a good player, is $5 million. So somebody breaking that down to be like, I just want money for the rest of my life. And Bobby Bonilla even stated in interviews that it works out for him because his wife was like, if you take the $5 million, you're going to spend it all and be broke. Just take the $1 million a year and you have a retirement plan.
And that's exactly what happened.
So do you think he invests his annuity payouts into other annuities?
That's a good question. I don't know. Hopefully somebody talked, you know, they already gave him great advice with this move. Hopefully he's continuing to make good decisions and he's not out here having a midlife crisis, buying things that he doesn't need.
Actually, I hope like every 5 years he makes really bad decisions. But he's just like, you know what?
Because he can.
Yeah. I'm going to buy two supercars for $1.19 million. And that's all right.
Or I'm going to buy a boat.
And I'm going to buy it on June 30th. Where he holds out all year. And he's like, happy birthday to me. If that was me, I think I'd change my birthday to July 1st.
Oh, my goodness.
But... And so, but reading some articles just in general about the markets, you aware of that MoviePass? Are you a member of MoviePass?
I'm not a member of MoviePass, but we talked about this before because we were talking about Regal and other companies that are starting to compete with MoviePass. And instead of MoviePass going in the direction of making things cheaper and more affordable and coming up with deals, they get more expensive, which is the opposite of what you want to do when you start getting competition. I think we talked about that a while back.
Yeah, we did talk about it a while back. But I think they were making the right move of making it more expensive. It was kind of a ridiculous thought to think that you could offer unlimited movies without restrictions for $9.99 a month. Unlimited brand new movies.
Yeah, but somewhere along the way, man, things aren't looking so great for MoviePass.
No, they're definitely looking horrible. And it doesn't help that the two movies they finance, the John Gotti movie is bombing.
Oh,
and then
Lord.
That other movie, The Animals, didn't get very good reviews. So it looks like they're not going to get return on investment on each of those. And then I go to AMC because it's across the street from my house, not because I'm personally invested in it. Though I'm thinking about it now because I joined the AMC Stubbs membership because one day I went there, you have to wait in line. If the people have Stubbs, they get to skip the whole line and go straight up to the register, even if you've been waiting in line for 20 minutes. And that was enough for me to be like, you know what? I'll pay $20 a year to make sure I don't have to wait in line if I come to the theater. Right. And I realize it works because I go to the theater much more often now, where I went for about 2 years, I would go to one movie a year. And now I probably average once a month, but it's because I had an investment in a brand. And that made me think that it's good. It's a value-added service that also drives me back to the theater because I want to get my return on investment. Well, now they have a new program called AMC Stubbs A-List. And for $20 a month, you could watch three movies, any movies that are airing at the AMC Theater a week, and you still get the Stubbs membership where you get to skip the line. And I think that's the biggest competition because when we talked about it last time, AMC was the first one to say, we don't accept MoviePass anymore. And this comes out 3-4 months later. And it's a tangible option. Like every time I go, I think about, is that a good investment? No, no, there's no way I'm going to get that money out of it a month. But the price of movies, $19, if you go to two movies a month, you probably get your money back.
That's true. That's very true. Especially coming from somebody like me that watches movies all the time. Because Regal, they have something similar. I have a rewards card with Regal. Not because it's something I'm personally invested in, but it's right around the corner and just makes sense. And it's kind of the same thing. You build those points up and you get certain privileges that otherwise you wouldn't have.
And so the Regal's one, does it work like AMC where you get a little discount on the popcorn or drink? And then you also don't have to pay the internet fees when you book your ticket online?
Yeah, and then if you go so many times, you get a free movie pass, stuff like that.
Okay, yeah, and so I think they work the exact same way, that AMC, Alamo Drafthouse, Cinemark doesn't have one yet, but Cinemark does have a new special where last time I went, and it's when I'm on the road, I go to Cinemark's. They had one where it's something like $8.99, and you could watch whatever movie you want. The only problem, most Cinemark theaters charge $8.50 for a movie, so there's not quite the value there. And I assume they're just going to copy AMC or Regal or Alamo Drafthouse.
They kind of set the model. That will be the model to follow moving forward.
I do find it interesting because for the longest – growing up, and now I'm saying growing up, like after our 20s, like once we hit 20 years old, we went to college, probably everybody limited their movie in the theater viewing because it was, am I going to eat this week or am I going to go to a movie? And those are your options. And then the movies are dying, the movies are going away. This seems like it could actually reinvigorate that industry as a theater, and the market reflects that it is, that Regal's up, AMC is up, and that they're scheduled to beat their earnings this year. And sure, we've had movie releases in the first half of the year that you normally don't get. You had Black Panther. The other Marvel one, Infinity Wars. You've had some just gigantic hits. But at the same time, I feel like every year you have gigantic hits, and normally you're hearing the woe of what is Hollywood. And I haven't heard one woe is me, Hollywood's running out of money story this year.
Right. Yeah, they're not running out of money. They're running out of ideas, but they're not running out of money.
I think everybody can agree on the ideas one, but they're starting to remake good movies like Superfly. Still go see it if you need to watch something ridiculous and fun.
I've tried to go see it multiple times, and each time it's sold out. And I'm looking at the box office, and I'm like, how is the box office not reflecting this? Because in the area I'm in, the movie sold out, and it's been out for a couple of weeks now.
But it's down to two showings a day at the one across the street, but closer to where I used to live, it's showing like five times a day. And looking up today, it looks like it's not coming out on DVD until September. So they're expecting this to keep, I guess, running with steam, where Slow and Steady will win the race. It's probably not going to make $400 million, but it might cross that 250 mark or 200 mark.
I mean, that's the thing about it, because when you told me about it, I waited, and I honestly assumed I would be the only person in the movie theater, and I went to go see it, and it was sold out. And then the show after that was sold out, and the only show that would have been available, it was a Saturday I went, was 8 p.m. And I was looking around like, what the hell? So I went and saw a movie called Tagged instead, and the movie was funny, but then when I found out the truth about the movie, I was sorely disappointed. But, MoviePass is going through that transitional phase. It's becoming what MySpace was. It had a lot of great ideas. Other people kind of borrowed and took their ideas, and now they're reaping the benefits from it.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest point, is there was an opportunity for them probably to sell out to one network and recoup a lot of their monies, but it's going to go the way of MySpace, where there's no way they can compete if they don't have access to the actual theaters.
Right. And banking behind the Gotti movie was a terrible decision, because I think that movie still has a zero rating on Rotten Tomatoes. I know people that have seen it, and I don't know anybody that saw it that really liked it.
I've actually, two people that's seen it have told me it's one of the worst movies they've ever seen. And typically they don't speak in hyperbole. They just say it's put together really badly. The storyline's not very fluid. And John Travolta looks ridiculous.
That's up there. I haven't seen it, but I know the worst movie I've ever seen is a Robert De Niro movie called Dirty Grandpa or something like that. Not the comedy one with Johnny Knoxville, but Robert De Niro and I forget the other guy's name.
I can't agree. But that Zac Efron movie?
I hate that movie.
That movie was so off the wall. And maybe I'm an Aubrey Plaza fan, especially whenever she plays her Ratchet character. That movie's off the wall and hilarious. We can't agree on that one.
This is the first time we really disagreed on a movie, but I hate that movie. Hate is such a strong word, but I hate everything about that movie.
And maybe it's because somebody recommended it to me when it was already on iTunes, but I laughed out loud almost that whole movie, because it's just over the top ridiculous. And the whole time, I'm not sure if it's actually Robert De Niro. I keep thinking that maybe this is a guy who just really looks like Robert De Niro, or maybe he has a brother, but I can't believe this guy took this role.
He secured the bag, even though to do so, he had to sign up for some terrible stuff. But yeah, this is the first time we really just disagreed on a movie. I hated that movie.
Man, you're wrong, but that's okay.
I wish I had Damon Wayans and David Allen Greer in the background. Hated it.
But one thing I will say, I want to make a correction. Superfly, not even close to $200 million, not close to $100 million. It's made its budget back. It's at $18 million, which I don't know how it's possible when there's so many showings.
What's the budget? Okay, it made 18. What was the budget for
16.
It? Okay.
So they're definitely banking on getting their money back from the TV rights and DVD sales. I'm sure they'll make more than that on DVD sales.
Yeah, and it must be word of mouth appeal, because the first weekend it didn't make much. And considering all the blockbusters that have been coming out, like, people have been slowly going to see it. So it may become a cult classic type of deal.
Oh, I'm for sure it's going to be a cult classic. And here's an indication that it might be. It was projected to make $7 to $12 million on its first 5-day opening weekend. It made 1.2 on the first day, 900,000 on the second, 1.8 on the third day. And then Friday it ended up with 6.9 million for a 5-day total of 9 million. And then the second weekend, it made 3.4. So I feel like it is word of mouth, because I haven't seen any commercials after it initially came out. But I also don't have cable anymore.
Well, I haven't really seen much about it either. I haven't been doing any promos or anything. So it got to be word of mouth. Like with you and me, it wasn't on my radar until you spoke so highly about it. But now with this Dirty Grandpa voucher, I don't know, man. But I'm gonna check it out this weekend. I told you I'm gonna check it out, and I will.
Use that membership.
Yeah, man. I'm gonna get my ticket in advance.
Yeah, technically you've already paid for it.
Right.
Just slide up some money over there. And I wonder how do these movie passes, everything else, affect the income of the movie? Do they get the full credit for that? Because I think with MoviePass, an analyst says the average person who is a MoviePass member watches 1.7 movies a month, so they really don't get their full value. So at $19 a month, it's a perfect price if that average continues. So I wonder how much money goes to the respective studios if it's part of a membership.
That's a good question. That money it has to be funneled some kind of way, but how is it divided and broken up? That's a good question.
And things that just make me say, huh. But
right.
On another note with companies, I was looking at it and talking to some people that I really trust their financial opinion, and they told me that they were pulling out of their stocks and because they're worried about what's going to happen in the near future. And by near future, they say 3 to 16 months. And one of the big indicators that I'm reading more about it and seeing what the activities is that the market is artificially inflated, and that companies are buying back their own shares is the only thing keeping the stock market afloat and giving artificial faith in the market, because companies set a record for share buybacks in the second quarter while investors set their own record for selling stock-based funds in June of this year already. So I wonder, does that change your strategy or perspective at all? Or are you hearing the same things from the people that you asked for guidance from as well?
I haven't heard that before, but I will tell you this, that does, hearing this for the first time, it does make me somewhat cautious. Because typically if there's thunder in the background, I'm quite sure lightning is not too far behind it. So that is something I would want to look more into, because if everybody else can see what's coming and I'm just standing around like, oh, that's okay, I don't need an umbrella. I don't know. That's something to keep a close eye on.
Well, it just makes me think, because it makes sense that everybody somehow was profitable right after the tax breaks. And
right.
Yet the S&P 500 is performing negatively for the year, which we're going to go over, because it's even performing negative for this 10-week period, which is shocking, even though it's a micro analysis of just one small period out of the entire year.
Right, but hey, our stocks, we're doing better than the S&P, so we're getting there. But I will say this, hearing that news, because people in the know, they don't just discuss those types of things just for hyperbole's sake. So if there's some concern there, it may make sense to pull back a little bit just to see where things go.
Yeah, because looking at our picks, our 8 picks, there's a couple of things that stand out to me. And mainly mine, I need to focus on particular sectors or pull out of sectors if I'm personally invested in them, as our economy just isn't being that there's not a lot of fluidity in terms of capital in those sectors right now. And when making that analysis, need to stay well-rounded, because I think that some of the things that are saving my overall profits and gains is that I have overperformers, even though one of my stocks isn't performing at all. And so how did your stocks play this 5th week?
Overall, they did okay. Although you're kind of catching the ground. You're making up ground with me. But overall, they were okay. Hold on. Let me go over the numbers. Dave & Buster's. So there was a 15.95% spike overall. So initially it was $47.16.
The one on the far end is where we started 5 weeks ago. So 40.67 is when you invested in it.
Okay. So it's up so now it's 47.16. So it's actually up. CBS started, it was $50.97. Now we're at $55.97, which is always nice. Audio codes has been going back and forth. That's one of the ones I got to watch based on what we were just talking about. When I started, it was at $7.59. It's up currently to $7.80. But whenever you're dealing with something that's dealing with parts and trade, you got to watch it. Thor Industries, initially it was $94.92. It's up 1.51%. at $96.35. Plus, we talked about it before with that dividend. So that's the biggest selling point for that. What about you? I know WWE is I'm not going to call it a cash cow, but I know WWE is your juggernaut. So how are they doing?
The juggernaut just keeps on rolling. It started off at 58.08. It's at 72.22. They've officially announced both of the re-ups. They announced the Fox deal. They've announced the reinvestment from USA for the Raw show. And now there's additional talks, which is driving the stock, about them selling their third online show to one of the regional, like Fox Sports Southwest, which is probably held up at this time because Disney is trying to buy Fox and Comcast is trying to buy Fox. So we'll see if there's enough money to make that contract go. But right now they at least have $1.5 billion coming in the next 10 years. And that's not utilizing any of their subscriber network or their live shows or their merchandise sales. So they're up 24.35%. And when I invested in them, I knew it would go up. There is no way I could have ever anticipated at this growth, because if this was the case, I probably would have put all the money I had in it, even though that's not an investment strategy. But in retrospect, everything is clear.
That was a good call.
Yeah, my other one, Host Hotels, is down. Started off at 21.56, ended the week at 21.03, so it's down negative 2.458. There is a dividend scheduled for July 16th, 2 weeks from now, for 20 cents per share. So that will modify it, and that's tangible money that I'm able to pull out without pulling out of the stock. If the economy goes, Host Hotels is going to be one of the first stocks that underperforms, because in particular, they own luxury hotels and destinations. So they don't have many just in the Midwest U.S. or downtown Houston. Most of them are islands or countries, resorts, people that are flying in and wanting to stay somewhere a little nicer than they would on average. Those are the types of hotels they earn. So when discretionary spending slows down, this stock is going to slow down. And this almost reflects the performance of the S&P 500. It's doing a little worse, but market performance-wise, it's pretty close when you look at the chart of what's reflected there. My next one, Illinois Tool Workers. I wish that this is one that's messing up my entire valuation. I'm happy I'm not really invested in it. It started at 147. It's down 6% to 137. There's a lot of money there. There's still going to be some sort of dividend to come out of it. But as the cost of oil, metal, everything goes up, the cost of producing their goods as well as the labor is going to increase. And that's not good for the performance of the company in terms of investment. And TJ Maxx is up 7.58%, started at 88.11. It's now at 94.79. And this is one that's really my counterweight to Host Hotels. As the economy, if it slows down, consumer spending slows down, people will leave the fine boutiques or specific brand stores and continue to drive the market towards TJ Maxx since they're buying lots. Yes, it's last year's fashion, but as a guy, I don't care. My collared shirt is my collared shirt. As long as it has a horse or it doesn't have a pocket, I'm probably going to buy it if it fits. So that's my thought going in there, even though it's anecdotal, as we stated before. But how did the Fees Always Win Index perform this week?
So the Fees Always Win Index right now, we're actually up. We're doing better than the S&P Index currently. We're up 6.65%. In regards to the investment club. Individually, Chris, your index is up 5.79%. Mine is currently at 7.51. both the way WWE is performing, you're making up a lot of ground. You're doing some good things right there.
If Illinois Tool Works wasn't part of it, I might even be in the league, but
you just may.
If I had a pocket full of mites, I'd be okay.
You're making up ground, sir. You really are. WWE, that was a good pickup on your end. Because that type of jump, there's no way you could have projected to jump that much so soon. And they still have things in the works, so it's only going to go up even more.
Yeah, I think we just have to wait for this Disney deal to finish. And that might not be done for another 4 months, but I think there's still time that I would invest. I'm going to invest more in it as the opportunities continue to present itself. And the S&P 500 is down a little more than 0.5% at 0.601. That's just for the last 5 weeks. But if your goal in investment is to outperform the market, then you have to look for your gains where it is. And I think that's also something that this is teaching me, is to not get greedy or not move too quickly. Since we're taking it in 10-week chunks, it's given me perspective as I look back, seeing that if I hold on to it for 10 weeks, it could perform. Like, I remember looking at audio codes last week, it was down, and now it's back up 2.76. So if your investment strategy is volatility investing and day trading, that's an opportunity for you. In 2 weeks, it's made a swing, which means not only do you make the positive 2%, if you bought it at the low, you have the possibility of making 4% out of that stock. And once again, that's beating the market, even though 2.76% is beating the market as well. And so, well, that's right. The dividend for this week. I guess, are we ready to go into the show?
Yeah, let's get it, man.
All right. Well, then. The opinions expressed on the show do not reflect the thoughts of our respective employers, family, or podcast network. We are not licensed by the FTC or SEC. Before acting on information on the website or from the show, you should consider whether it's suitable for your particular circumstance and seek advice from your own financial or investment advisor.